Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for June 24th, 2011.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Children who were exposed to the dogs or cats were not at increased risk of developing allergy to that dog or cat.
They're seeing all of the colors we can see, but with varying amounts of ultraviolet mixed in. And we really have no idea what this looks like to a bird.
And it turns out that about 30% of all offspring are not sired by the social father.
Lots of colors that look white to humans actually look distinctively non-white to birds.
This week, the genes behind unfaithful finches and why birds don't come in as many colors as they could. Also, could keeping a pet make kids less susceptible to allergies? But first, Suzanne Bard answers a listener's question.
Millions of bird lovers have been watching a pair of bald eagles raise two babies in Decorah, Iowa, via a 24-hour-a-day streaming webcam. Listener Greg Silvis of Boulder, Colorado, is one of them. He's enjoyed seeing the nestlings grow up, but he's puzzled by one thing.
How do baby birds get water while they're still in the nest?
We consulted raptor biologist Janet Linthicum, who's been working to save threatened and endangered birds of prey for over 30 years.
The way that young raptors get moisture is from their parents. And what their parents do is they have a piece of meat in their beak, and then they drool saliva on it so that it's very moist, and that's how the youngsters get their moisture. It's sort of like colostrum. It also gives them some immunity.
And smaller birds like sparrows get all the moisture they need from the food their parents bring them. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a Science Update mug.
Thanks, Suzanne. Birds come in a dazzling array of feather colors, but their plumages appear even more colorful to the birds themselves. That's because feathers are infused with ultraviolet, which birds can see, but we can't. Cambridge zoologist Mary Caswell Stoddard explains.
When we think about bird vision, they're seeing all of the colors we can see, but with varying amounts of ultraviolet mixed in. And we really have no idea what this looks like to a bird. Because birds have four color cones instead of three, their entire visual system is calibrated differently. So this allows birds to see a whole range of colors we humans are blind to. So to give an example, lots of colors that look white to humans actually look distinctively non-white to birds because this white color has varying amounts of ultraviolet mixed in. So when you see a gull fly by and it has flashy white plumage, you might stop and think for a second that that white might not look white to other birds.
Despite the diversity of bird plumages, Stoddard says many colors that birds can see, like ultraviolet yellows and reds, simply haven't evolved yet in bird plumages. She and her colleagues have mapped out just how colorful birds are from a bird's eye view.
So we used a model of bird vision to map nearly 1,000 plumage colors. So from a broad range of birds, almost every color we could find, really, we tried to map in this bird vision color space. And to describe this color space a bit better, you can think of the traditional color triangle you might see in an art class, where each vertex of that triangle represents one color cone in terms of human vision. Well, by extension, bird color space is a tetrahedron, where each vertex of the tetrahedron actually represents one of the four color cones. So you can imagine that we measure a whole range of bird feather colors, and we plot them inside of this bird color space. And the bird color space represents all of the colors birds can theoretically see. And much to our surprise, we found that those plumage colors only filled about one-third of the possible colors that birds can observe.
She says flowers can produce many colors in the bird visual range that birds themselves cannot.
So it's very interesting to think about why bird plumages mechanistically are unable to make some colors that plants can. they have this subjective impression that birds are very colorful creatures, and at least to human eyes, they seem to exhaust all of the colors possible. But it was really a revelation to find that actually there are many bird-visible colors that bird plumages just cannot create.
Next, Justin Warner learned that genes may play a role when finches cheat.
Like humans, birds called zebra finches are socially monogamous, and like humans, committed partners often stray. From an evolutionary biology standpoint, the philandering makes sense for males since they can sire unlimited offspring. But for females, the benefits of extraneous affairs are limited since they can lay only so many eggs, and they risk losing the parenting help of their jilted mate. And yet the females still cheat anyway. Now, behavioral ecologist Wolfgang Forstmeier and his colleagues at the Max Planck Institute for Ornithology in Germany may have explained why. They painstakingly studied hundreds of birds in a controlled setting and closely monitored their sexual behavior.
And we study how often males court females other than their partner and how females respond to such courtship from extra pair males. And we use paternity analysis to study the parentage of all the eggs that are being laid. So for about 2,500 eggs, we have studied the paternity, and it turns out that about 30% of all offspring are not sired by the social father.
His team found that promiscuity did indeed run in biological families, even when the eggs were switched around so the birds couldn't be imitating their free-loving parents. The key finding was that the same genes promote promiscuity in both male and female finches.
So it kind of changes how we see female promiscuity. In the past, people have said it has to be adaptive, otherwise it shouldn't exist. And now you can say, well, it may as well be maladaptive because they inherit this predisposition from their fathers.
In other words, females may be promiscuous not because it actually benefits them, but because the genes benefit to their fathers and sons simply outweigh the cost to the female carrier.
Thanks, Justin. In other bird news, Harvard scientists have found a detailed history of mercury pollution preserved in the feathers of endangered seabirds. Their collection of the birds goes back 120 years. Levels of mercury in the feathers increase as the feathers become more recent, revealing just how much of the toxic element humans have been releasing over time. Next, Suzanne reports on new research that could be good news for pet owners.
Many parents worry that having a pet in the home will make their children more susceptible to allergies. But a new study suggests that when children are exposed to dogs and cats in their first year of life, they may actually be less likely to develop allergies to those pets by the time they reach adulthood. Epidemiologist Janessa Wajinka of Henry Ford Hospital in Michigan led the study.
Children who were exposed to the dogs or cats were not at increased risk of developing allergy to that dog or cat.
The evidence was strongest for boys, whose risk of developing allergic antibodies to dogs and cats dropped by half if they shared a home with one of those pets as a baby. Wajinka says the results held true even if one or both parents had allergies.
We're not saying go out and get a dog or cat. However, if I were having a child, I would not remove the dog or cat from my home for fear of my child becoming allergic to that dog or cat.
Her team plans to investigate what it is about pets in the home environment that influences children's developing immune systems.
Thanks, Suzanne. Wild-ranging cats in central Illinois are infecting wildlife with a serious neurological disease, according to a report in the Journal of Wildlife Diseases. Toxoplasma gondii is a parasite that reproduces only in cats, but can cause disease in other animals that come into contact with it through cat feces. The study found that a third of the cats sampled carried the disease, and between 6 and 30% of wild animals were infected. Toxoplasma gondii from cats has been found in other regions, and even in otters and other marine animals. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, why fat substitutes could cause weight gain, and how researchers are using wasted heat from cars to cool them. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.